So, yep, I'll play you guys a song. This is called Cattle Prod Hands, actually. Well, they tortured me with the cattle prod hands. I'm lost to the world in this red tape soldier plan. With the blind leading blind, please rise this down while the marbles still roll in my hair. Don't say it's make-believe that it ain't real when it was. How could you say to me after what you
with regard to drones, drone technology, drone warfare, what you've been hearing, what, some concerns you may have, and maybe we can collect some of your questions, and then Brian and Maya and I have been thinking about these issues quite a bit in previous talks, so we might try to feed some ideas back, but we invite anybody sitting here who's decided to go on this long trip, as well as Buddy who's been coordinating us to. Okay, so killing of innocents, commercial use of drones, and what are we hoping could be taken care of by our doing this walk? So the cost and who's in charge? I want to invite Brian or Maya to jump right in on any part of those questions that do a summary. It seems like there's the question of who's in charge and what is the cost. In doing this walk, what do we hope to accomplish and how can people be involved in controlling the drones? The question about the commercial use of drones and what do we think about that? And then the likening of drones to drive-by shootings, to something that we can be assured will always kill somebody.
I'll start in about who's controlling it, because we're finding out some new things just in the last few weeks about how the drones have been, who's been in command of the drones for a while. That's been very disturbing is, well, first of all, there's all kinds of, the Homeland Security is using Predator drones as well to watch the border of Mexico. And we just know some months ago, one crashed in the Pacific Ocean, and it was only, they were just able to get enough control over it to not have it crash in San Diego. Since another drone operated by the military crashed in Lake Ontario a few months ago. But as far as the military drones go, we've always been told that there are two programs, and one is done by the CIA, and this is the president on every Tuesday sits down with his advisors, some of them by Skype call, and they have what have been described as like baseball cards with the pictures and statistics of different people who've been accused of being terrorists, and they will choose the ones to be targeted. And the CIA then is doing this, and they're doing it secretly, and they're doing it far away from the battlefields, and they are killing people who are not a suspicious character. And the president decides this, and even in several cases, deciding about American citizens living overseas. And some of the legal experts who are waiting to see how they weigh in now, who have been saying that the CIA program is extrajudicial execution, totally illegal. It's operating in countries where Congress has not approved conflict. And it's done under the CIA was never set up to kill people. It was set up just to gain intelligence, to gain information. And then you have the Air Force, which is, we've always been told, was a whole separate program done by people who are wearing uniforms and who are actually supporting the soldiers on the ground. And we've been told that this is actually maybe even saving lives because it's more precise and, they can, as the president's words, we can kill the people who mean us harm, without threatening the lives of the people among whom they hide. And this is all done under the chain of command. And it's all done very openly and overtly. And it's the people who plan this and run this program, unlike the CIA, are answerable to Congress. Well, several, I think, six different former drone operators have said that distinction is all a lie. That in the depths of Creech Air Force Base in Nevada, there's a secret Squadron 17 that answers, there are military people who answer not to the chain of command, but answer to the CIA, answer to secret people who are ordering them to do these things. And really, this is just another layer of illegality on top of all the rest. And it's just a matter of keeping the truth away from us. Because this is the kind of program, and we've been seeing it. Kathy and I were part of the first protests against drones in 2009 at Creech Air Force Base. One thing we've seen is that the image of the drone has been, in people's minds, has been evolving. And when we first started this 5 years ago, even many of our friends in the peace movement saying, what's the big deal? But this has become clear, more and more clearly something very sinister and something very, very, very frightening. This kind of program can only exist in secrecy. It can only exist when there's not transparency and when we can't talk about it. So finding out who exactly is in control of it, it's a very important question. And so is the issue of the money, and how much this exactly costs is very unclear. It's like everything else the government does is more expensive than they tell us. And we're beginning our walk at Boeing tomorrow, walking from there to the drone base in Battle Creek, because Boeing is one of the contractors, you know, it's following the money. One of the corporations are making the most money off of drones.
I'll just say a few words about targeted killing, because I think that was one of the questions, and that's something very common that we hear from our politicians. I hear Barack Obama saying it all the time, that drones are a form of targeted killing. It's an accurate way of pinpointing insurgents and disposing of them. There's less likelihood of civilians being caught up. As Kathy mentioned in the introduction, I've joined her a couple of times in Afghanistan on peace delegations where we meet ordinary Afghan people and we hear their stories. And we both know a fine young man in Kabul called Roz Mohammed. And 5 years ago, his brother-in-law was killed by a drone strike. An innocent civilian, he was on the edge of his town in Vardak province, which is a Pashtun area, with five of his other friends, all around the age of 20 to 25, having a barbecue. A drone flew overhead, dropped a bomb, and killed all of them instantly. Roz Mohammed's sister is now a widow and has to bring up their child by herself. There was an investigation into the incident, but there was no explanation provided to the family. There were no reparations given to the family. And I'm informed that this is quite a common story in Afghanistan. Britain is the main culprit of drone strikes in Afghanistan. We have a fairly small fleet, but it's highly active. And we currently have a veil of secrecy over the number of drone strikes. Well, not number, we know that there's been 455 British drone strikes on Afghanistan, but we don't know how many people have been killed. We don't know where those people have been killed or who those people are. We know more about drone strikes in Pakistan, which America is mainly responsible for, thanks to the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. If you go on their website, they've got fantastic articles all about drone strikes, not just in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Iraq as well. And we know from the Bureau that in Pakistan there's been... in Afghanistan we know from the Bureau that there's been 1,015 drone strikes since 2008. In Pakistan, it's been 383. So there's been three times more drone strikes in Afghanistan than in Pakistan. And we know that the number of people killed in Pakistan is 3,719, of which 202 have been children. So if you take those figures and roughly multiply them by three, you're getting a figure which you'll probably find are the number of fatalities in Afghanistan. And if Roz Mohammed's story is anything to go by, the people being taken out by drones are mainly, on the whole, civilians. Also, there was a report that came out that said that in Afghanistan, a drone strike is 10 times more likely to kill a civilian than a manned fighter aircraft. So in no way are drones an accurate way of targeting people, and in fact, it's hugely disturbing for people in Afghanistan who have experienced now 33 years of war. They've got all the problems in the world in this country. They've got a million kids who are malnourished. You've got a million drug addicts. 80% of the world's opium is from Afghanistan. Still masses of problems with women and the campaign for women's liberation is nowhere closer than it was 13 years ago. And on top of it all, they have drones flying over their heads 24/7 for a population where 80% of the population have mental health problems because they've endured 33 years of war. It's really the last thing that they need.
I'd like to address the question of what can I do. It was explained to me quite some time ago that, for instance, my home state of Pennsylvania, 3 million plus citizens. So if you write to your senator, okay, you're one of 3 million, I'll just put this aside. But if you write to your representative in the House, now that's a smaller group. He can hear you. And these days it's much easier. You can just send an email, phone call. Before you had to write a letter, that's about the only way you get through. It's much easier now. And your answer doesn't have to be technical, it can just be, it's inhumane what you're doing. It gives ill will to other countries. And as for what I expect from it, I'd expect one person at a time to see my point of view that drones are inhuman. It's not a nice way to carry on a war. It's a coward's way to carry on a war.
I think another thing that is doable is to write letters to the editor. I just read one that was written by Frank. Frank, would you say something about the most recent letter to the editor that you wrote?
I wrote a letter to our archdiocesan newspaper, the Catholic Herald. I'm from Milwaukee. And in our church, the parish I belong to, I serve as a lector. I don't know if you know what that is. I read from scripture during the liturgy, and I also read the petitions, the prayers of the faithful. Well, last weekend being Memorial Day, you know, we had one of the prayers was for our armed forces. It's kind of a standard prayer for Memorial Day. You know, let our troops, you know, be safe and come home okay. And the letter I wrote to the Catholic Herald, which they actually printed, was, well, if we're going to do that, let's just take it a step or two further. You know, what would be wrong with praying that the Taliban get home safely, that they eventually have to put down their arms and go back to their families? What would be wrong with praying that the people in Al-Qaeda feel God's grace and God's mercy and decide not to kill anymore? You know, and what I mentioned in the letter is that, you know, as Christians who say that we're supposed to love our enemies, at a minimum we could pray for them. So that's what I wrote. I'm very familiar with the military. I went to West Point and graduated from there, and I was in the Army during the Cold War for 6 years. I was a helicopter pilot, and against the wishes of my wife and myself, our oldest boy enlisted in the Army 5 years ago, and he went to Iraq, and he killed a guy. He told me flat out that he pumped 30 rounds at some guy. What I think is worse than that is with the drones, because at least our boy, with Hans was up close and personal, he knew what he did. He knew it wasn't in the shadows. With the drones, it's something that it's designed so that people don't notice it. And I think that that's part of the evil involved. A war that's up front, and a war that everybody can see for what it is bad enough. You know, the person my son shot is dead, and that's not going to change. And my son's going to have to live with what happened. But a war that's in secret, a war that's designed to be secret, I find that very disturbing.
So what do we hope to accomplish? I think taking a cue from Frank, inviting people to kind of look in the mirror and see ourselves closer to the reality of who we, and I use we carefully because I know many, many people don't want to give their consent to war after war after war, to this 21st century kind of more mechanized warfare. And yet, you know, if we seem to be acquiescent or seem to be passive or seem to be kind of quietly mesmerized, then we'll have a far less of a chance to steer toward a better future. So we want people to understand that the drones will be operated by pilots in Battle Creek, Michigan, at an Air National Guard station that will now be turned into a place where the pilots become hunters looking for high-value targets. We want people to understand that, you know, when the United States says it's collecting intelligence, that the usage of the drones and all the footage that's collected through surveillance and all of the fear that might even cause people to uproot themselves and run for their lives, because even if a drone just flies overhead, sometimes whole communities pick up and go in Afghanistan. They've got nowhere to go. They go to refugee camps that are already horribly overcrowded, and sometimes they run because they're afraid that the Taliban will attack them, because they'll accuse them of having given information to whoever operates these drones when the drones fly overhead. So the misery that Maya has spoken of, we've seen so compounded. And then I feel like I just have to add in that the United States right now is spending $2.1 million per year per soldier in Afghanistan. And for the 1 million children suffering from severe acute malnourishment who may not survive, those children that Maya mentioned, do you know what it would cost to get iodized salt into the diet of any one of those children? Iodized salt that could rescue the child from having chronic brain damage for the rest of a lifetime. Just iodized salt. It would cost 5 cents per child per year. Now, what would we rather spend our resources on? The 5 cents per child per year, the children we don't hear about, the children we don't see, just as we didn't see the children in Iraq, just as we hear President Obama say, oh, no, we're the exceptional nation, we're not like Russia. When we invaded Iraq, we didn't take their resources, we didn't take their land. What about their children? 500,000 of whom were killed by economic sanctions that we imposed. So we want people to be able to see the consequences of our warfare, and also to, we hope here, even from General McChrystal, certainly someone that had been very, very involved in the counterintelligence program, he said as recently as 2013, January of 2013, that the arrogance of the United States drone program jeopardizes security for people in the United States, because all around the world, when people look at the way that the United States is waging warfare against other countries, they feel not only fear, but antagonism. And these drones are proliferating. It's good to think about the commercial drones, but we almost can't imagine what it would be like to have little drones and big drones flying our skies for commercial reasons. And then meanwhile, Israel has sold the technology to China. China has sold it to Pakistan. All around the world, the weaponized drones pose a threat. And how much do people know about it? Oftentimes, the media is not going to equip people with even the basic information to ask some of the most important questions. So we're very, very grateful that you've come tonight to think about this and to ask questions. I wondered, are there any further questions that anybody has thought of while we've been talking so far? Oh, Brian.
I think the question of you brought up of collateral damage and killing people who are not even guilty. I think this whole drone program has just been murdering the English language as well as. Another collateral damage is Michael Hostage, who's a general in the U.S. Air Force. He's the head of the U.S. Air Force Combat Command. Last September, in a speech, he said that the drone is useless in a combat situation. That it is no good in any kind of conflict area. In other words, it's not good at fighting a war. But he said it is good at these assassinations. Now, under international law, the whole thing about, you can use force against an imminent threat. And an imminent threat, what does the word mean? It means when the base is already rocking, its fall is imminent. It means it's immediate, it's right here, it's urgent. And that is always meant before, that you could use force to stop somebody who's about to shoot a bazooka into a school bus or something. Or somebody who's going to launch a missile, somebody who's actually involved in, to use a more domestic thing, is like you can shoot somebody who is climbing in your window with a gun. But under this more creative definition, in the words of our Justice Department, definition of drone, of imminence that's necessary, we need a more broad version, so now somebody who thinks, who you think might someday come in your window with a gun, you can shoot that person when he's shopping at the supermarket. And it's taking away from its thousands, and some of these are happening in countries where there's no, where there's simply no, no conflict going on, where we're not at war. And we're doing it against the wishes of the governments there and violating their sovereignty. So it really isn't a weapon of war. These people who are being killed by the drones, they are just victims, and they're not combatants. And this is not really, I think there's a parsing out who's the combatant and who is the who's the non-combatant. Is they're just about all non-combatants. And we're using this these signature strikes. So we have the personality strikes where they name somebody and then go after them. And we have to think in the years of 13 years of Guantanamo, there were more than 700 people there, just over 700 total inmates at Guantanamo. And these were the worst of the worst. These were, in Donald Rumsfeld's words, these were the ones who, after going through the prisons at Bagram and Kandahar and other places we don't even know about still, these were the ones that were culled out of the worst terrorists and the worst enemies of the United States. 700 men. It's now down to 155, and 75 of those have been cleared for release, and they have not been released for political reasons. For political reasons, they just released 5 members of the Taliban. But there are 75 people who have been cleared for release with no contact. So what it is, and of the other 70 so prisoners there, only a handful of them do we have anything on. So this intelligence is not any greater, except now we're not putting people in prison without trial. We're executing people without trial. And it's probably, there's no reason to think the intelligence that's being used to target these people on Tuesday mornings and kill them is any better than that which locked up these 700 people and ruined their lives, taking them away from their families and tortured them. And now we find out that there was no connection with any kind of threat to the United States for almost all of them. And then they have the signature strikes, which is somebody who's just acting like somebody, acting in a manner, somebody sitting in the United States at an Air Force base or a National Guard base is looking at a screen, and he's determining that somebody is acting in a way that shows that they might be a threat to the United States, not imminently only under the new definition, that someday they might do something. So really, this is not even war. This is a crime. And I find myself more and more, as I know many of you are in the Mennonite tradition, pacifists, and I cannot abide the idea of a war being legal or a law that allows war to happen. But I'm seeing, though, I'm finding myself more and more talking about laws and taking indictments to military bases, because what we're seeing is just gangland murder. That seeing what's happened when, and I think when we talk about pacifism, we're not talking about getting rid of the laws that might control. You know, what we're seeing now is a military or whatever this is now, because it's not under the with this news that just came out about the CIA ordering the military around. This is no longer the traditional idea of a military under a chain of command. This is something all different. It's a gang. It's a gang that is going around killing people randomly, and the implications of this are just terribly frightening. Another word that they've done is that they've murdered is due process of law. At least four American citizens have been killed by the drones. so far as we know, any of them might have been arrested, you know, in Yemen. And Eric Holder, our U.S. Attorney General, has said, you might think that the constitutional guarantee of due process of law means judicial process. Well, you'd be wrong. What this word means is that due process can be met by the president deciding secretly on evidence that no one will ever see that a person is a threat to the security of the United States, that person has had due process. Now again, I'm frightened of using the word due process because we've had this string of horrific killings in the United States in prisons under a lethal injection for capital punishment. One of the latest ones in Oklahoma, this poor man, hours after having the chemicals injected into his body that were intended to kill him, they didn't kill him, but the stress and the pain that he was suffering, he had a massive heart attack and he died of that. But this is somebody who had due process. So as we're saying this is illegal, this way of warfare is illegal, and we're saying that this is not due process, and we're saying that this is that these people are not imminent threats. I just have to say for ourselves, we have to be very careful. I'm not saying that if there were due process, these murders would be legitimate. And not saying that if these killings would meet the criteria of the Nuremberg and the Geneva Conventions, that it'd be okay. But I'm also reacting in horror at the idea that all these restraints seem to be lifted. And it's not going to stop here. Once these laws are gone, they're gone. And we were not going to have, none of us will have any of the protection, as minimal as they've ever been, and as abused as these laws have always been. We're losing even that. So this drone technology is a very key thing in our civilization at this moment. This very, very, you know, this issue about addressing these drones and speaking plainly and clearly about this is really very, very important at this point in our country's history, and this point of our planet's history. There are some very good efforts. There have been two, the special rapporteur on extrajudicial executions, and the other one on human rights. There have been very high level condemnations of these weapons in the United Nations. And the current president of Pakistan, Nawaz Sharif, the European Union, this is, everybody thinks this is legal, but the people who are using them. But one of the weird things that's being done politically, but done legally, is President Obama insists that the drones, and that we have the permission of the Pakistani government to use drones in their airspace, and of course we wouldn't go in there if we didn't. When the president of Pakistan is insisting over and over again, stop this, calling in the ambassador from the United States into his office at midnight, saying this is a crime, this is an atrocity, it has to stop. Our answer is, well, of course they have to say that because they have to get elected, but they are giving us permission. It's secret permission. Now there's no such thing as secret permission from a government. You have a driver's license or you don't. You can't get pulled over and say, my driver's license is a secret one. Or I'm building an addition on my house and, the zoning board gave me secret permission to do this. It doesn't exist. And if you think of what the horror of this is, if it were true that a government were giving permission to a foreign government to secretly come into its borders and kill its citizens, that is the most outlandish of the claims of the so-called 9/11 truthers. And of course, if that's true, as the people who are saying this about our country and 9/11, it totally makes illegitimate any government that would do that. And so what we're saying, what President Obama is saying about the current government of Pakistan is it's committing crimes against its own people that rob it of any possible claim of legitimacy. So we're we just have to just keep insisting on this, that this is, this is not legal, it's not moral, it's not keeping us safer, it's not protecting our soldiers. It is that all the claims that are being made about the drones and have been celebrated about the drones have, each of them have been proved to be false, proved to be a lie. President Eisenhower made his famous speech warning about the military-industrial complex, and his warning was that war is so profitable if left in private hands, the making of weapons left in private hands will lead to a situation where we're not producing weapons to fight a war, but we're fighting a war to produce weapons. Mm-hmm. And I think, as we're talking about at supper, I've been just a year out of prison from a 6-month sentence in federal prison, and one thing that really struck me in that prison was how the Federal Bureau of Prisons is doing everything that's contraindicated toward reducing recidivism and helping people build a better life and everything. It's like, it just is a horrible realization to come to that the Bureau of Prisons and our Justice Department wants more crime. They're doing this, they're not trying to make our streets safer and trying to heal these the wounded people in the prisons and failing. What they're doing is very, very successful. And we're hearing General Stanley McChrystal, who Kathy quoted, and what the list of people, you can Google the words, killing, creating more terrorists than we can kill. And you will find all these government officials who have used those exact words, but they're not saying we should do anything different necessarily. And we hear that and we're scared. And we think that something else has to be done. If you were a major shareholder of Boeing, say, you might not think that was bad news. And so it's just a horrible realization that what President Eisenhower said has really come, really, it's been true for a long time, but it's more true all along, is that the people who we trust to try to solve our problems are not really all that interested in solving our problems if exacerbating them is going to bring in more money and more power and going to serve their purposes. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the question, is this program failing? If we believe that nations should be able to live in peace, and we believe, if we don't call it the rule of law, but of some kind of fairness that's applied to all, and if we believe, if we cherish the lives of the people who live in countries far away, and even cherish the lives of our own people here, this is a miserable failure. But I don't know if everyone sees it as a failure, and that's kind of the, what can we do? We have to build a culture where that's different, and that's a hard bottom up work that we have to keep doing.
Taking action and risking 6 months in prison, that I crossed that line myself yesterday, and that's likely to be in the future. But six months in a prison seems to me to at least tiptoe toward matching the urgency that we're facing right now. So in whatever we can each do in our own individual separate ways, and as communities together, and as people in Chicago who want to say to the universities, say to the churches, say to the media, say to your neighbors, we don't want to continue to put up with this. And thank you.
Well,
just maybe one thing we could notice is that, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but initially when Des Moines was being named as a place where the drones would be operated, there was kind of a chest thumping, like, ha ha, aren't we great, we got the drones. But then when people wanted to find out more about the installation of drone technology and training of pilots, it got to be almost kind of secretive. They didn't really want to let the public know, because there was more of an anxiety. But Brian, could you say something more about the numbers of jobs that were lost?
Well, actually, the history in Des Moines, one of the things in the Air National Guard in Des Moines was the wing there right attached to the airport. There were, for many years, a fleet of F-16s on the runway, and often in the skies, all over Des Moines, you'd see these F-16s going across the sky. And initially, when the announcement was made it was going to drones, there was a huge outcry. The governor and the whole congressional delegation was against it because they were losing 300 high-paid civilian jobs for the maintenance of these war machines. And I'd already been arrested there probably about half a dozen times over the years, the first time when the Air Guard went to Panama to help with Just Cause. So I'm not celebrating that, but until it was a done deal, they were trying to save these jobs. And of course, now there's no F-16s on the ground, and there's some people sitting at computer terminals, and there is somebody empty the waste paper baskets. It's just a completely different economic thing. So this is a, you know, but now everyone's rallied around to support this. But what we found, though, I did research and trying to find, especially around Des Moines, what's been going on, is back over the years since 2009, whenever a base would announce that they were doing this change to drones, it would be 9 months to 15 months that was accomplished. Now, but over the years, as the protests have escalated, and members of the officials of the National Guard have actually said that the protests have turned people against the stuff that they do. There's a sense of secrecy, and in Des Moines, it's been like a year and a half since they've announced that they were going to make this change, and I've been in contact with their public relations colonel at the base, who's been very cagey, saying it may be another 2 or 3 years before it opens up. And so why this takes so long? And they said, well, this is a very complicated process. And I use the example of Syracuse, New York. It was the exact same thing, changing from F-16s to Predator drones, and they did that in 9 months. And what's the deal? They're no longer bragging about what they're doing. And I think that's our doing. And a part of it is that we've been able to go to places like Syracuse, where the Air National Guard is flying out of the airport there, and going to Whiteman Air Force Base, going to Creech Air Force Base, and we know what's going on inside those bases because they've told us. They've told us that they're flying drones over Afghanistan and over. You know, now we know about. You know, it took some subterfuge to figure out about what they're doing with the CIA, but we've basically known we could stand outside those bases and say war crimes are being committed right now behind that fence. But what they're doing now is keeping it vague, so we can say to the public, and we have to couch our demonstrations, well, we kind of think that someday, eventually, they're going to be doing something over there, but we're not quite sure what. So I think that's been done to really weaken our resolve. But I think what we can do, with this playing, if they want to play with the word imminent, if they want to say that somebody who acts in such a way that they might be a threat someday to somebody else is a reason to kill them, we can say that the appearance, the very appearance that this military base may be flying drones is a good enough reason for us to go there and block their gates and demand that they stop whatever it is they're doing in there that they're not telling us about. Because what's happening in these places is, under the new definition, an imminent threat to human life. And we have to react then as though this threat is imminent.
Can I just say something about why
Last year, there were 6 activists in the UK who broke into RAF Waddington, which is where we operate drones from. We were operating from Creech Air Base outside Las Vegas up to April last year, and then they opened RAF Waddington, and so they're now operating from there. And 6 activists, who are very good friends of mine as well, broke into the base on, I think it's the 4th of June, which is the International Day of Remembrance for Child Victims of War, to remember all the children who have been killed by drone strikes. And they went in, pinned up photographs, mainly of drone victims in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, and a couple of them planted a peace garden as well and went on a citizen inspection. And after about an hour, they were apprehended by the security, who realised that they weren't part of the base. And then they were trotting around for an hour, and like the Susan and Keith had managed to plant an amazing peace garden inside the base. Anyway, they got arrested, and they got sent to trial, which so happened to fall on the 7th of October, which was the anniversary of the Afghan invasion, which we thought, wow, you couldn't have planned it better. And 6 of them, they'd prepared different lines of arguments. Susan Clarkson, who's a retired, partially sighted ex-nun who came to Afghanistan with us last year, her whole thing was that she had been to Afghanistan and met people who'd lost family members to drones. Penny is a grandmother, so she was saying she was doing it for the kids. And Henrietta's a teacher. And Keith, who is a priest, and he was there in the defending himself in his dog collar, he had a bit of a wrangle with the prosecuting lawyer, because Keith was arguing that Britain is now a war zone, that because somebody is sitting in a bunker operating drones, pressing a button thousands of miles away, someone else is being killed by the press of a button in Britain. And so Keith's whole thing was, you know, it's a war zone. Britain is now a war zone. We're perpetrating war crimes on British soil. And the prosecuting lawyer was sort of arguing back, going, well, no, it's not a war zone. It was this kind of back and forth. And then the judge eventually just stopped it and said to the prosecuting lawyer, with all due respect, it's a zone, and war is being perpetrated from it. And so we were like, yeah, the judge said Britain is a war zone. So I was outside press releasing all of this stuff. And the result was that the Waddington 6, the 2 priests, the partially sighted retired ex-nun, the school teacher, the grandmother, and Chris Cole, who's a drone researcher for Drone Wars UK, who knows everything about drones, they got found guilty. I think the judge was a bit reluctant about having to find 2 priests and a nun guilty. So he gave them the minimum fine that you could get, which was it £10 fine? Brian was there. They got £10 fine and then some court costs. So it was like a record minimum fine that they got. So that was a real success, we felt, for the protest movement. We had loads of coverage in the media. All the broadsheet papers covered the story about the case. So that was one of the kind of successful resistances that's been going on around drones.
One song from Charlie King, actually, who walked with us last year, and we walked across Iowa. And Iowa's a beautiful state, but sometimes it could be a bit tedious. And so we started to happily entertain ourselves with various lyrics, and Charlie King entrusted this song to us. Some of you would know the tune from a Stephen Sondheim song, and Buddy's got a good voice for carrying it, and anybody else who wants to chime in who can remember verses, like Deb down there at the end, you're welcome to chime in here. Isn't it strange? Aren't we a pair? One of us safe on the ground, one in midair. Where are the drones? Don't give your name, never ask why. One rolls a joystick around, one gets to fly. Which is a drone? Hundreds are dead, thousands are maimed.
Digitized dolls on a screen, no faces, no names. Finish my 4-hour shift, and I find I'm alone. Far from the fray, address unknown. Don't give your name, fire and forget. Ask not for whom the bell tolls, feel no regret. Only a drone, a defensible drone. No problems yet. Isn't it strange? Isn't it queer? Terror remotely controlled, a pilot's career. Where are the drones? Why are there drones? Is anyone there?
You know, since Voices in the Wilderness started out in 1996 to try to draw attention to United States warfare in Iraq, Amy Saraya has been accompanying us. She's now a full-fledged nurse and she's helping heal people in many different ways. But Amy's singing is something that many of us in the Chicago area have been so grateful for, because you've always combined your passion for justice with your passion for music. So Amy will close us out with a song, and I wonder, Amy, do you want to have the microphone come your way?
I just want to say thank you for letting me sing this song. And I wrote soon after the passing of Nelson Mandela, and I was reflecting upon the oppression of apartheid and how that continues and how we continue to need to fight that. And so this is called We Are Fighting You Now.
like a spring of hope that's pushed down too long, will break free. Oh, we'll break free. We'll break free. Oh, we'll break free.
Thank you to all of you. We hope to see you again when we're back in Chicago, some of us, or perhaps on another walk at another time. We seem to be doing these annually. But please, let's work together in this area, in our locale, to make sure that this issue of the drones is front and center. And we'll be looking forward to working with you on that legislatively and as we try to narrow the gaps between law and justice in our country. Thank you.
So where do we have to be at 9 a.m. tomorrow?
Oh, right. 375 West Randolph. 9:15 press conference, and I imagine we'll be walking by 9:30, 9:40 or so?
Yeah.
Great. And how far are we going to walk to, buddy?
We'll walk down to 79th, and we'll be walking along the lake. So we'll be down to 79th. It's about 12 miles tomorrow.